This is Health First with Kathy Hart, available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We have Sherry Cormier with us right now. She's a psychologist, a consultant, and an author of the book Sweet Sorrow, Finding Enduring Wholeness After Loss or Grief. Welcome, Sherry.
Thank you so much. I'm so delighted to be here.
Well, I am so glad that you've come on the show. You know, like there's one thing that's for sure, that we're all going to lose somebody we love sometime. So this is a very pertinent topic for all of us.
Yes, it really is. Loss is really a universal experience. And, you know, so all of us will lose someone. And, you know, some of us lose jobs and we lose relationships, we lose houses. I mean, there are so many ways that we can experience really challenging loss. So, you know, I'm sort of, I guess, a spokesperson, being a bereavement trauma specialist and psychologist, about how to really handle this experience that can be so gut-wrenching, and yet at the same time, over time, can be very growth-promoting as well.
So for just about all of us, it will stop us in our tracks. So there's just downtime.
Initially, absolutely. And absolutely stops us in our tracks.
Yeah. And how do we make grief and pain productive? You've created 8 tools that we can lean on to help overcome it. Can we go through those tools?
Sure. I have. And, you know, I think initially you're right that we get stopped. That's probably a good thing because we're in shock, we're often numb, and we need to really just sort of try to absorb what's happening to us. So really the first tool that I talk about is willingness. We don't usually like it when loss hits us. You know, sometimes there are voluntary losses, and we may choose to leave a job or leave a home or leave a relationship. And yet even those voluntary losses really carry a certain grief with them. But certainly for involuntary losses, when we lose a house to a wildfire or we lose a loved one, you know, we have a financial loss. We don't want to be in the situation we're finding ourselves in, and we want to be able to hold on to what used to be but is no longer, and that sort of holding on really makes things more challenging. So willingness is sort of an initial first step because that helps us accept the new reality. It helps us accept what is happening to us now with the challenge of the loss. And it helps us let go of resistance that we might have to trying to move with the change and be fluid with the change. So that would be the first tool, would be willingness.
Mm-hmm.
And another tool would be, and this will sound funny, but another tool is actually play or humor. One of the best pieces of advice that I ever got when I was going through a lot of personal loss was to take breaks from grief. And grief is a very heavy emotion. And we need to process our sorrowful feelings and our sadness. And yet, at the same time, sort of being in that mode of processing sorrow and sadness all the time, it can be really difficult. And so taking breaks from grief, and I say to people things like, do something fun. What have you always done for fun? And even though it doesn't maybe feel like fun at the moment, do it anyway. Or think about something new that you haven't tried that might be enjoyable for you. Humor is good. Sometimes listening to, watching or listening to music or watching a comedy, anything, you know, hanging out with a pet or maybe a little person. I have someone in my life right now who just lost her husband and is very grief-stricken and is lucky because one of her daughters just had a baby. And so she's in the middle of this sort of weird juxtaposition between having just said goodbye to her husband and feeling so sad and so grief-stricken, and at the same time, she has this new joy, this new bundle of joy that's welcoming life. And she always feels uplifted when she goes to see that new baby. So anything that can make you feel better or can make you feel uplifted, and that sort of leads me to the third tool, which is inspiration. Anything you can do to provide inspiration for yourself. So I like to listen to uplifting radio shows and podcasts, just like the one that we're on right now.
Right.
And that's the one way that I have always drawn inspiration and really made myself feel better. I started listening to podcasts and radio shows and TED Talks. I do it every week now with the loss that I've had. I recommend it to other people. Some people, I think developing some kind of a spiritual practice is very useful. Some people get a lot of inspiration from mindfulness. Some people like to read inspirational, uplifting books. And, of course, I always recommend for inspiration getting outside in nature, because we know that plants and trees and green space and water and sky is so healing, and the trees and plants emit compounds that are aromatic, that we breathe them in and we just feel better. So to me, if you're stuck for inspiration, you're stuck for something uplifting, you want to take a break from grief and you don't know what to do, go find a beautiful place to walk by the water or in the woods and just take a little walk or a little hike without your devices, of course, where you're surrounded by nature. Do that for about 20 minutes, and I think you will really notice a difference.
Sherry, is there a difference between clinical depression and grief?
There really is. There really is a huge difference. Clinical depression, you know, grief is, I'll start, I guess, with grief. Grief is really a reaction to a specific life situation that involves something that you feel sad and sorrowful about. So sadness is not the same as depression. Depression is a mood state. It's in psychology, it's a clinical disorder that involves the body and really the mind and even the emotion or the spirit, where your thinking is distorted, your body, you know, you don't have any energy, you may not sleep well, you don't feel like doing anything, you're thinking kind of, we call it the negative triad, negative thoughts about yourself, other people in the world. And there's also often a biochemical part of depression where your cortisol levels are often out of whack, which cortisol being the stress hormone, one of the stress hormones. So that is a very distinct difference. Now, you could be someone who has depression and then gets hit with a big loss, and on top of the depression, you then become bereaved and grief-stricken. Or you could be somebody that never has had depression and gets hit with a big loss, and then you become bereaved and grief-stricken. But if you've never been depressed, it's not likely that having a big loss will cause you to become depressed. It's likely it will make you bereaved and grief-stricken, but not depressed. Although, for about 10% of people that experience a hard loss, and usually this is often a loss that's occurred that we can't make sense of, like losing a child or maybe losing someone to violence. About 10% of people do stay stuck in bereavement and experience what we call prolonged grief, sometimes called complicated grief. Depression often does become a part of that syndrome, and that sort of prolonged or complicated grief does require professional psychological treatment to sort of work through that.
So to make our grief productive, it's a good idea to find a counselor and help work through it anyway?
Even if you're not depressed?
Even if you're not depressed, to keep you, to make your grief productive rather than being stuck.
Yes, to help you process the grief. I love recommending that people go get grief counseling. I like to recommend grief support groups. I think they're marvelous. Now, I've had people say to me, and I do understand this, well, I don't really want to go and be around other grieving people. I already feel awful. I understand that at one level, and yet my experience with bereavement support groups is so overwhelmingly positive. Because actually, when you get in a room with other people who've had heartbreaking loss, even though they're sad, you're going to find so much support because they understand what you're going through in ways that other people might not. There's a lot of support from a bereavement support group you might not get from other people in your life. And there's just something I think about, you know, it's one thing to tell your story to an interested friend or someone in your family or even to an individual counselor. But in a group setting, the energy is so magnified that, to me, the pluses of being in a support group are so wonderful. And then often they're facilitated by a bereavement specialist who can really, you know, say things at sort of critical times in the group for information giving and for education, just like, you know, the question that you just raised, someone might want to know, well, mm-hmm. Am I just grief-stricken or am I depressed?
Right.
So I don't recommend trying to process your grief alone, because grief and bereavement are very self-absorbing, isolating experiences to begin with. And we know from a lot of research that sadness in particular is a human emotion that is probably healed or helped to heal sadness most by our strong connections with other people.
Absolutely.
So that's so important to emphasize to people.
Yes. We are going to have to go to a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to go through the rest of the tools in your toolkit for grief.